I believe there are two ways to approach our lives. One is looking at it as a series of norms we have to live into and objectives we have to achieve. This view is full of expectations, pressures, bias, and systemic dynamics that continuously need to be overcome. The other is to look at life as a series of choices we make and goals we set for ourselves, a life that is full of agency, growth, and opportunity. Welcome to Live Stoked and Lead Stoked, where we explore both life and work from that latter perspective. I'm your host, Sarah Bettman, coach, consultant, and speaker. More importantly, I'm a fellow traveler on the path towards living my own stoked life, and I'm passionate about helping others do the same. Let's jump into this exploration of life and work and what it means to live and lead stoked. Hello, everyone. We are recording with none other than the world famous Susan Hyatt. I can't even tell you how excited I am to have her here today. And so you are listening to the Live Stoked, Lead Stoked podcast, and I can't imagine anyone who embodies this more and has traveled the journey. She wasn't born this way, living her own stoked life and helping women to do the same. I'm not going to tell too much of her story, but welcome, Susan. I can't tell you how excited I am to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here. What a delight. What an amazing podcast.
Oh, thank you. And I should say, how does Susan get to be here? Well, Susan and I met at this incredible event called The Most. I don't even know if it was separate from Hello 7 or part of Hello 7. I don't actually even care. I just know it was awesome. And then Susan became my coach. So Susan and I have had a relationship probably for a year and a half, 2 years. She helped me transition from corporate into what I'm doing now and some of the seeds that got me here. Some of the quotes that I use about myself came from Susan. So that's my personal reason for wanting to have her here. So Susan, I'm going to start with a question I ask everyone. What does it mean to you? What does it mean to you to live stoked? And recognizing that's my word for it, coming from California, what's your word for it?
Ooh, I would call it big yes energy. I love the word stoked. So I love living stoked, but to me, it's meaning that I'm living my yes.
Okay. And of course, I'm going to say more because I know there's depths and oodles on this. What does that mean for you? And actually tell us some of your history, how you came to this.
Yeah, sure. So you're right. I wasn't necessarily born this way. I went a very traditional path in life. I was born in Savannah, Georgia. I was raised in the Catholic Church. I had a how do you do it right checklist, and I absorbed lessons from culture at large, my family of origin, my religion, about what does a young woman do to achieve the American dream. And, you know, go to school, did that check, get married, did that check, have a couple of kids, did that check. And then I was like, what are these things called golden handcuffs? You know, there's got to be more to life than what I thought I was doing to achieve this dream that wasn't even mine. And then felt very guilty, hello, Catholic guilt, for not being more grateful for the husband, the kids, the house, the revenue. And I went on this journey to figure out, what did I even want? What lit me up? What was I even passionate about? I really had no idea. And then that led me through self-discovery, that led me to just reinventing my career. The husband remained, you know, going on 31 years, and my children are grown and flown, 25 and 23. But, you know, about 18 years ago, I really started considering what else could I do because this ain't it. And started my life coaching company in 2007 and never looked back.
Yeah. And I love just even the time that I've known you, how you've iterated. I mean, if nothing else, I've inspired, like, just try it. Try it. See what happens. You're doing this thing called Year of Yes, which I'll let you talk about in a little bit. But one thing I want to bring up, because as you were talking, I'm laughing. So we're not on video yet. This is the early stage of the podcast. But if you saw Miss Susan Hyatt, she's in pink, bleach blonde hair with pink headphones and contrast that to a picture you posted maybe a year ago of you in the office. It was a typical office photo. I think you're sitting on a desk with your colleagues in an appropriate suit. I put air quotes on, around that. And the change in your journey to finding, because part of living stoked, it's not just about living this big life and doing all things. It's actually hard. To your point around the Catholic guilt leaving, I said, you know, what kind of asshole am I? I don't want to save lives for a living when I was a paramedic. What kind of asshole am I? I don't want to, you know, mother my kids in the way the world is telling me to. What kind of asshole am I that I have a great career? Blah, 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 right? Whether it's Catholic guilt or whatever. But I would love to know, you know, you've told us kind of the high level, but really you fundamentally changed your being, your presence in the world. And that picture, I just laugh at so much because I know it, right? How many corporate women have taken that same picture with the appropriate, oh, are you pulling it out? Do you keep it in your desk?
This picture? Do you mean this picture?
That's the one. Yes, she's holding up a picture of a very appropriate bob, a lovely black shirt with the ruffle coming out of a, I don't even know how to describe the blazer.
It's like a taupe blazer. That was my real estate headshot.
Okay. So yes. Tell us about kind of the personal transition for you, because I know there's way more to what came to be of the Susan Hyatt Coaching Company that allows you to do this really well and authentically and live it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I started out working in marketing and public relations in Washington, D.C. And then we moved. And so I worked in marketing promotions for a company that had 6 radio stations. And so that was a fun job. And you can see a lot of old radio days show up in my marketing today. But then I became pregnant. And when we moved, I was 6 months pregnant. So I decided to have the baby and then start looking for jobs after I had the baby. But then I decided that I would stay at home for a little while. And I stayed at home with my children for about 3.5-4 years. That was long enough. And stay-at-home momdom was really difficult. And I learned a lot about myself, namely that I wanted to go back to work. And so I re-entered the workforce as a residential real estate agent. My husband was and still is a commercial realtor and developer, and real estate was always his passion, not mine. And while I was really good at it, it was an example of you can be really good at something, and that doesn't mean that needs to be your life's work. And so I found myself making a lot of money, but not feeling fulfilled. And listen, over the course of all of those reinventions, I was a rape survivor, I miscarried, so I had a lot of trauma and grief that I left unchecked. And when I was working full-time as a residential real estate agent with 2 little kids, it kind of all came to a head, really dealing with that grief and loss and who am I, and, you know, had an early, I think, existential crisis and had to unlearn everything that culture and family of origin had drilled into me. I was mired deeply in diet culture, so I had a lot of food and body image issues. I had to really unlearn that my worth came from my productivity and how much money I made. I had to really examine, you know, like, what was I even doing? And I remember watching Oprah and seeing these people go on her show that were so passionate about whatever it was. And I just remember feeling really lost and thinking like, wow, I guess passion is just something that I don't have, or I wasn't meant for, which is so funny if you know me now.
I can't even imagine, to be honest.
Right. I was like, I guess that just passed me by. So it was only through learning how to pay attention to the wisdom of my body, how to pay attention to what lit me up, what gave me that feeling of being stoked versus what looks good on paper versus what feels good living it. And I had to let go of my checklist of here's what you do. Here are the hoops you jump through to have a good life and start figuring out like what really matters to me.
Isn't that the funniest thing, right? We get into living this, you know, live stoked is living despite roles and identities put upon us or that we put on ourselves, which in many cases I was guilty of doing it to myself. No one asked me to do a certain thing. Now we could argue society and debate it, but I took what society delivered. But when we start living our stoked lives, one, it's not easy. And I have a question related to that. But two, we sometimes end up doing the same things we thought we had to do, but we're doing it in a way that's so rooted in who we are and what we want. Your book, Bear, I'm going to jump to there. I should warn you all, Susan and I, and this happened in our coaching, we go all over the place. So if it feels like I'm jumping tracks here, I know Susan can go with me and hopefully you all are okay with it too. Was really powerful because we're of the same age. We're both 50. We are navigating this new thing. My vessel has just gone haywire in many ways. And at the same time, I also have such grace for this vessel that is my body now because there is just nothing I can do other than be healthy and such. And when I read Bear, you know, it gave me permission and it was a perspective that I didn't feel like others were talking about. Could you tell us a little bit about, and that, was that your first book? I can't keep track.
That's actually my second book. My first book, I was just talking about it earlier because we're recording this in March, right before St. Patrick's Day. My first book was called Create Your Own Luck, 7 Steps to Get Your Lucky On. I wrote that in 2009. And so obviously in all these years, my perspective has changed on many things. So it's out of print. But Bear was my second book and with a major publisher. And Bear is a book of really about coming home to your body. So it's a book that encourages you to opt out of diet culture and learn how to move and feed and adorn your body in ways that feel like love as opposed to deprivation or shame filled.
Yeah, I love that. I'm looking actually for a quote here my friend sent me. And okay, let's see if I can read it without emotion, but I think it embodies this. And I said to my body softly, I want to be your friend. It took a long breath and replied, I have been waiting my whole life for this. And this is Nayira Wahid who said this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a lot of kind of what Bear was getting to, that I had no idea because I, you know, I had the same, not same story, but same kind of impulse around food and diet culture. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you help people navigate that? Because it's tough.
Well, you know what's tougher? Diet culture. So often.
And I'm asking this on purpose because you have to fight for this. Like there are people who are hell-bent to hang on to diet culture. Yes. And I've seen you kind of navigate the thin line on that one in many different ways. I've been internalizing the frustrated WTF side, right? There is that reality. But then there's the compassion and grace that I know from whence you came.
Yeah.
How do you navigate that?
Always with compassion, right? Because when people are basically fighting for or arguing for their own oppression, right? The enemy is not the person. The enemy is the system, right? And so when someone wants to come at me with whatever the latest trend is, whether, listen, my philosophy is if you can do it wrong, you're on a diet. Y'all are welcome to fight for your own oppression. Go on ahead. But I really take a strong stand for women everywhere that you have been sold a lie, that your currency is your appearance. And not just beauty, right? It is how thin can you get? Can you take up less space in the room? Great. Then there's your value. And I'm just here to say, what if that's not it? What if you could take back all the energy and capacity that you put into weighing your food and counting your calories? And what if you put that into living a stoked life? What might happen? I mean, oh, the PhDs that would be written and the mountains that would be climbed and the problems that would be solved if we could help girls and women everywhere just wake up to their own brilliance and stop feeding this lie that we should weigh a certain amount.
Yeah. And I'm going to state it here because I'm going to put it out to the universe. I would love nothing more than to have Myrna Valerio on this podcast. She's a...
I'm getting ready to see her in person in a couple days.
Please tell her hi. I know her from the Hello 7 group, but at the same time, I sometimes feel like I'm the creepy fan. But she is opening, blowing doors wide open in the distance trail running world around size and body image. She's doing, I think it's the Lululemon Challenge. I don't even, it looks crazy.
Yeah, she's out in Palm Springs, which is where I'm going. And we have a coffee date set, and I will tell her about your podcast.
Thank you. That would be great. You're okay. Welcome. See, that to everyone who's listening, just shows, just ask. Put it out there. You never know.
Totally. You create your own luck. Look at what you just did. I had no idea you were a Myrna supervisor. I mean, honestly, who's not? If you don't know about the Myrnavator, but I didn't know that you were a super fan of Myrna. So you had to tell me in order for that to happen.
I have been a super fan probably, I don't know when it happened. It seems longer, but when that first article came out in Runner's World.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was like, oh, this is amazing. And wow, that is bold, because I have been in the process of finding my voice. And I don't talk a lot about my weight journey or any of that. And for her to boldly just go out there, and it has not been easy. So anyway, we'll save that conversation when Myrna's here, and then, you know, maybe we'll the three of us can talk. So now you've transitioned from Bear, which, you know, to listeners, it is the belief of live stoked, lead stoked first, you know, living despite identities and roles being put upon us so that we can live a life of agency and choice, and that you need to do that before you can lead others to do the same. And taking into organizational spaces, when you create spaces for people to facilitate their life's dreams, whether it's visiting you and working with you for a couple of years or for an entire career, then all this kind of makes the world go round. That's our premise. But under that premise is career. And this is in the order of my coaching clients have come to me. Usually they come for career. They maybe want to make a change, but then the first question is, do I have the money? And so I know you have an opinion about money, so that's where I'm going here. But then there's also key relationships. If they're married, or in a partnership, or if they have kids, the question then becomes, can I move and do this change? What is the impact on the relationship? Then kind of home, you know, community. I was in Michigan, Matt and I were in Michigan for 3 years and learned very clearly we have a very strong sense of place here in California. It's where our family is. As much as we love Michigan, our home is here, right? And so any move I make probably needs to be nearby as long as my family's here. And then finally, well-being. And well-being's last, and you might even say, well, well-being should be first, we were just talking about, but it's the last thing most of my clients even consider, and how well they are to make the changes in their life. So in that I share that with you because I feel like those are the same journeys as you're talking about topics. They're different sides of the same gemstone, as I may say. So, you know, tell me about a little bit about the journey with money and how that leads to agency, because I've seen you play with some topics around that, and I think you have a really great perspective on it.
Yeah. I mean, I talk about generating money, but also investing money and creating wealth as part of your legacy and impact in the world. And, you know, I certainly have spent plenty of days broke. And, you know, particularly when I was a stay-at-home mom and we were living on one income, we often look back on that period of time. When we first got married, I was a college student and Scott was working in the world already. And he often jokes like, you were the best investment I ever made. And he was like, I fully expected you to take on the world and make lots of money, honey. So then when I decided that maybe I should stay at home with these babies, that was a big adjustment for us and not expected. And it worked out fine, but we were broke. And I remember this was back in a time when writing checks was normal. Like, we were still doing that. And there was a corner store, like a little convenience store, not far from our home. And I didn't have enough cash to go buy a Christmas tree from the Boy Scout Christmas tree lot. It's like $35. And I went and floated a check this little corner mart would like let me write checks and give me cash. And I knew that it would take him 4 or 5 days to deposit that check. And by that time, I would have money for the Christmas tree. But listen, I was out here kiting checks for a Christmas tree, $35. And so I wasn't poor, but I was broke. And I remember when I re-entered the workforce as a residential real estate agent, and I had an aqua blue Dodge Caravan minivan that I had gotten in a fender bender, because I am a terrible driver, still to this day, gotten in a fender bender and didn't have enough money to repair the bumper. And so I remember driving that minivan around, trying to sell houses. And my first commission check, when I held that check in my hand, like I had created that paycheck myself, it activated something in me. I would never have considered myself an entrepreneur up until that point. And I remember thinking, wow, I did this, and now I can fix that minivan. And I went and bought the biggest refrigerator that King's Appliance sold at the time. We needed a new fridge. And that was it. I was like, I will sell this house today. And I went on to understand more about generating your own money and the power and the agency that I felt being able to do that. And from that place, started investing in real estate. I flipped some houses. I started to understand and get on board with what my commercial realtor husband had been trying to convince me of for a long time about how you can invest and create wealth through commercial real estate. So we started doing that. And I had to change my mindset quite a bit from instant gratification, right? Like I have my moment with the bumper and the fridge, right? And shoes and like, you know, all fashion, all those things, right? But I had to really change my mindset from instant gratification to an investor mindset, which is, you know, getting paid later or seeing this grow and the fruits of your labor coming later, the long game instead of the short game. Of course, I enjoy both. It's not like now, today, I don't treat myself. Of course I do. But I think that women are often excluded from conversations about money and investing. We're taught from a young age we're bad at math, which is actually not true. If you look at the research on investing, there are far fewer women investors. But once women learn investing, we actually outperform men in results with it. And so part of my mission is to help women understand not just how to generate money, but how to keep and invest their money and grow wealth. Because let me tell you something, the amount, I'm sure you've seen the research on the amount of women who die in poverty, who get screwed in divorce, and who the domino effect of the wage gap in retirement is scary.
Yeah. And I've actually heard, so my sister's in finance. In the statistics of how many women whose husbands pass and then they inherit or their financial planner inherits, and those financial planners are old school boys club, let's just mm-hmm. generalize here, and they don't take care of the women. They're in some ways they're predatory. And so teaching women to understand the decisions they're making, the fees associated, what they're offering, the moves they're making. You know, my mom got herself in a situation that, you know, had I not done my own work, I've been studying the financial independence retire early movement, which was mind shifting, except for us, it's financial independence retire on time movement. But, you know, but the point being is I knew to look the numbers and I knew how to read what was going on. And I never would have seen that and caught it. Unfortunately, we were able to get her in a situation, unwind it. And now I'm acting as her CFO.
But
one of the things that I remember is, and I think this is something that, you know, it's implied in what you say, and I found it's just afraid to look, right? I'm afraid to look at my job because it might mean I have to leave. I'm afraid to look at my money because I'm afraid of what I find out. I'm afraid to look at my key relationships because I'm afraid I'll have to leave my husband. Mm-hmm. And you were the one, you and I talked about this on a coaching, this idea of just look, right? Just look. If you look at your career, and you hate it. Awesome. That's the agency piece, right? You have to navigate it, and working with coaches or trusted friends, partners, therapists, whatever your board of directors is, you know, same with money. You already know you're in deep shit, right? You intuitively know it. That's what's keeping you from looking. But once you see it, you start to go, oh, that's how I can fix it. And I went from a huge amount of debt, almost filing bankruptcy. And I will never forget this Citibank rep who said, you know, you had a medical bill. I think I can lower your payment. That shift was just enough for me to start the snowball effect for paying down a lot of debt. Frankly, living in the same place I'm living right now. So for those of you who haven't heard my story, my husband and I, when we relocated, are still living with my brother. But I look now, like I do Finance Fridays, and it's very, I put soothing music on in it. I love looking at my finances almost too much. I could do it all day.
Wow, amazing.
Well, it's because it's a mess and, you know, it's not a mess, but yeah, it's just very calming.
Let me just say one thing that relates to what you were just saying. First of all, please. I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of what you're doing there because there aren't very many people who can say what you just said. And the other thing is, I recently heard Tiffany Alice speak, and she said a quote that stopped me in my tracks, which was, and it was around money, but it could be applied to anything, shame shields solutions. And so when you're afraid to look, when you feel ashamed, when you're keeping it a secret, your debt or your weight or, you know, binge eating or like whatever it is that you think you're the only one or it's so shameful and you can't say it out loud, it shields possible solutions that you could have access to because you're so mired in shame. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be quoting that for the rest of my life. Because if we can just say to a trusted friend, like you're saying, or a coach or a therapist or someone like, hey, I've created a mess, or I'm in a mess, or I'm scared to look, then you can start to find solutions.
Yeah. And I think it was, I love that because I used to think it was a Pandora's box. That I would open up and come across something just so damn awful that I couldn't recover from it. And the idea is the more I've done this and looked in the hard places, the more I realize, and I've seen this for my clients, that there's no Pandora's box. That thing we're waiting and bracing ourselves for never comes. It actually starts some motion. And I love the, I talk about it in a chaos theory, just by looking at, like, we've already changed things in our lives just because we had this conversation. It doesn't require that cathartic curl up in the ball. And that's one thing, actually, you know, we both have our stories, and a lot of kind of coaching stories start with that cathartic curled up in a ball crying. I had that, but at the same time, we don't need to have that. I don't want to imply that the way you learn and grow is through that awfulness.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so two things I want to make sure we touch on before we wrap up here. We still got a bit of time. I want you to tell me the story of you and Scott and what happened last year, because it's pretty damn cool.
You're talking about the 30-year vow renewal.
That was not a vow renewal. That was a, what is it, a royal wedding.
You know, you're the second podcast interview I've had today where they said something very similar. So Scott and I, in April, it'll be 31 years. But last year, I had said, you know, I'm turning 50. You're turning 60. We're going to be celebrating our 30-year vow renewal or 30-year anniversary. And wouldn't it be great to have a vow renewal? And Scott was like, I guess, you know, he was sort of like, yes, but he knows how I get. So he was like, yeah. And very long story, shortened somewhat, we ultimately decided to do it in Savannah, Georgia, where we were originally married, not in the cathedral where we were married, but in the town, because otherwise, you know, all of our loved ones aren't able to travel and we wanted everyone to be there. Now, it was meant to be very intimate. And it escalated, as things do with me when I'm stoked. And it was very, very elaborate. I had a custom gown made that had a cape. We had a pipe and drum band lead us into the ceremony that was in a square in Savannah. We had a flash mob. We had, I mean, horses and carriages. We had...
I see Robert's fingerprints all over this, by the way.
Well, actually, Robert, no. Robert actually was just in attendance. No,
That's a mutual friend who also has a flair for going big and doing amazing things. So I thought there may have been some influence there, but...
Well, he would say the opposite. He would say that his events are influenced by me because I'm so over the top with my events.
Ah, but the truth comes out.
The truth comes out. But that being said, I mean, Mr. Hartwell fully enjoyed the parade, the jazz band, the string quartet, the flash mob, the carriages. And it was just a beautiful... It was very meaningful. Now, all the elaborate details aside, you know, we had some tough breaks, and Scott had recently been diagnosed with prostate cancer. He's fine now. But I was like, you know what? You know what we're going to do? We are going to show up and celebrate. It is not an easy thing to stay married for 30 years. And we've had our share of ups and downs, and it was important to me to do that. And it was a fun time.
If you could see her face, now I'm regretting that I'm not on video, because that tells you everything, right? There's no calculating. And I knew you were planning, and there were probably moments, but how you're lit off, it was so authentically you. And I wasn't there, by the way. I saw the pictures after, to those of you who are listening. Like, you could see just how perfect it was for them. Right. You could see the meaningfulness of it and the pride and the joy. And as much as that wedding is, or vow renewal, wherever the hell it was.
Scott calls it a wedding too. It's like, that was a wedding.
What I love most about you and Scott is seeing you two on social media, on Facebook.
He's in trouble right now. He's in timeout.
Because of the cookies? Or something else?
He's something else. He broke one of my favorite Fortnum & Mason coffee mugs.
Uh-oh.
Emptying the dishwasher. And I have a theory that he just didn't want. I kept saying to him, like, I made those cookies you're referencing. I made all this food. And I'm like, let me tell you something. You are going to empty the dishwasher, reload it, put the dishes away. Okay. Because Mr. Man likes to skirt out and find himself busy with all kinds of things. So I said to him multiple times, okay, go empty that dishwasher. Listen, I'm telling you right now, that man, he was like, okay. And he goes in there, and then I hear crash. And I go in there and I'm like, you know what this is called? Weaponized incompetence. Okay. You think you're going to smash? Let me tell you something, Butterfingers. That is Fortnum & Mason, not Walmart. Anyway, we have a whole thing going. So, and it's all on social because I drag him on the social media streets on the regular.
Well, and I love it so much because it's just fun. You know, someone said to me, you know, key relationships, however you identify that. One of the greatest compliments I got when Matt and I were fairly early in dating is, we just like to be with you. You're fun to be around. And that's how I feel like it would be with you and Scott, just sitting around, just you totally. Two or something else.
unless he's breathing too hard. Okay. If he's breathing too hard, or chewing. I'm a delight to be married to, but I mean, honestly, I do really enjoy his company. He is my best friend. He really is.
Yeah. And you can tell. Okay. I'd be remiss if I didn't get into Year of Yes, because I think that's not even what it's called. That's one of the books. What do you call it? The Yes Thing.
Yes. So because of trademark issues, it is now called Big Yes Energy. And
love
it really is about living your yes. And so it's a membership program that I have where every Monday there's a pep talk and once a month there's a class and we have events and meetups, but it's really about living stoked. So what does living your yes mean to you? And we cover all areas. We cover business and sexuality and money and relationships and friendships and taking care. We do the Bear Method inside of that group. And it's really a really cool community of women who really want to live on their own terms and redefine what living their yes means.
Yeah. And I was lucky enough last week to meet a few of them and hear their stories. I won't share them here because they were shared in a dinner setting. But what they're doing and the things they're working on are really, really cool.
They really are. Listen, you are a great example of the kind of person that is in my groups. You know, they are badass women.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for the badass women. And because this podcast isn't focused on women, and I know you talk about this, you know, what is the message for men? Because, and I'm going to go all the way back to, you know, what, 30 plus minutes ago, you know, the Bear method and Bear, there's a story in there for men, right? Money, there's a story in there for men. Living your big yes energy, there's stories in there for men. And that's a little bit of why I brought kind of Scott into the conversation. Maybe I should have him on the podcast so he can speak for himself. But, you know,
he'd defend himself.
Defend himself. But, you know, there is a really lovely way that you also, even though your focus is on women, what would you say to the men out there? Because your message is not just for women, it just happens to be who you work with.
My message for men would be to examine their privilege, honestly, that they can live their yes and have fuller, richer relationships if they're willing to take a look at their privilege and unwind what culture at large has fed them that's untrue about what it means to be a man. Most of the messaging they receive is toxic masculinity and, you know, I love my husband. He's a man and I have raised a man. My son Ryan is 25 and I feel that it's an interesting time for men because they have an opportunity to unlearn what it means to be a man and they get to learn how to show up differently and be in relationship with women.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I work in the corporate space on this discussion with predominantly male leaders. And what I see is when they understand privilege or when they understand some of the things through the lens of what's been available to them, but not necessarily for women or women's, when they get it, the activities, the actions, and the things they do on behalf of the women in their lives, whether personal or at work, is amazing. Right.
Yeah.
But you got to stop. And it goes back to just look again. And take a deep breath and look at how you have to unwind some of the things you were told, just like you said. And so I wanted you to share that because women advancing is not just the group that needs to do the work, you know, and this is, again, I play in corporate spaces, to be clear. You know, the advancement of women or any marginalized group is dependent on the majority group being engaged and being involved. And that's one of the reasons why I say, you know, diversity inclusion or creating inclusive cultures really is a leadership problem, not a strategy and tactics problem. So I appreciate you taking a moment and saying that because, you know, Scott is your biggest cheerleader. Your son is doing some amazing things and creative things as well. And your daughter, you know, I've been with you long enough to see her grow into a transition and just, I think of some, you know, some of the pictures of you in New York City with her and how she's just embracing and being herself. So
listen, she, let me tell you something. It is so fun to see these kids growing up, you know, they're 20 somethings. So it's hilarious, their stories and what's going on. And, you know, my daughter is a big inspiration for me. I actually, in my group, I was just like, okay, we're all going to do the Cora Hyatt this week. And I told them a story. And it's like, there is no one that advocates harder than a Gen Z, you know? Yeah. I was just like, wow, I raised that.
It's amazing. I love seeing it. So, okay, we do have to wrap up now because you and I could go on forever. The first question as we're wrapping up is there anything you're reading, watching, and listening to that you're just loving these days that worth sharing? And it doesn't have to all be educational, just something that you love reading, watching, listening to.
I am late to the party and obsessed with This Is Us, the series. Now, there are probably half your audience is like, girl, that was how many years ago? I am destroyed every day by an episode of This Is Us. I think it's some of the most well-written, well-produced television that I have ever seen, and it will also break your heart. But I think it's a good, there's no issue left untouched. It's all the issues, all the humanness in one. So I would say that. I also am reading Farnoosh Torabi's A Healthy State of Panic, which is a fabulous book. She is a financial guru, an author, and I think you, if you haven't read it, you would really enjoy it.
Cool. Thank you. And then, of course, finally, where can people find you?
The hub, SusanHyatt.co. If you go to Instagram at Susan Hyatt, I'm also Susan Hyatt on Facebook. I'm very active on all of those, in all of those places.
And we, you know, we went all over the place here, but just a peek into day-to-day life, from cookies to boating to New York to client work to everything. The dogs, oh my God, the pictures of the dogs in their Easter outfit, or with the Easter bunny.
The Easter bunny, I know. I don't know why we're like this, but we are. And the Persian kittens just got their Lion King shave. It happens once a year because they get so matted and they're so angry with me right now. So those videos and pics are hilarious.
I love them so much. So if you want to hang out and just get an inner look of the Hyatt Riot family, you got to follow her on socials, but also check out Big Yes Energy and the other things that Susan is doing. Well, I can't thank you enough for being here. You are an inspiration to me. It feels this to listeners. This is another example just asked. I was like, Susan's going to be way too busy. She can't be on here. I don't have 40,000 listeners. And I was scared to ask. I was scared that you'd say no. And you said yes right away. And so
resounding yes.
Resounding yes. So I can't thank you enough. I love our conversations. I get so much from you, but I also get so much from the people you work with and engage with. So thank you so much, listeners. Thank you so much for being here with me. As I have said always, more of you are listening than I have family and friends. So that's terribly exciting. And it's an incredible honor that you choose to spend your time with me, and in this case, us. So everyone, have a great day, and I will talk to you later. Thanks so much for joining us for Live Stoked, Lead Stoked. We know you're busy, so it means the world to me that you'd spend this time with us. If you're interested in digging deeper on the topics discussed today, be sure to check out the show notes for resources and links related to this episode. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you found this to be time well spent. Your support helps us immensely. Plus, consider leaving a review. They're like virtual high fives, and I appreciate every one of them. Finally, stay connected with us on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Feel free to shoot us a message or a question. Your stories and experiences enrich the community we're building here, and you never know, your question may end up on a monthly Ask Me Anything. So until next time, keep subscribing, keep reviewing, and keep living your most stoked life. We'll be back with more inspiration, stories, and insights. See you then.